I have a little gift.
Where is this gift?
It's right here. Oh. It's actually a little wiener.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, please tell me you don't already have a little wiener.
I do not have this. So, yeah, you did
awesome.
Good.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So good to see you.
Good to see you.
All right.
Keep up with that.
Okay. I like her.
Welcome back to the Locked On Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Zach_Goodall. You can check out all my work at LockedOnJaguars.com and obviously subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Megaphone.fm. I am joined by my co-host, Chris Thornton, who you can find at the same place as I am, but under a different handle of Misto Christopho. Chris, what's going on?
I'm doing good. Can't complain.
We are happy to be joined by Bleacher Report's own Matt Miller to give a solid preview, kind of project, talk about some fits in the draft for the Jacksonville Jaguars, as well as tonight is the finale of The Bachelor, a show in which I only know one contestant who was sent home a couple weeks ago because we followed each other on Twitter. That is Jenna Cooper. Otherwise, I know really nothing about it. So I'm going to let Chris and Matt handle that closer to the end, but we're going to get right into the Jaguar stuff. So Matt, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll go ahead and get into it. Matt, I mean, everyone knows you from Bleacher Report and your podcast Stick to Football with Connor Rogers, but go ahead and give us a bit more of a work plug for you.
Yeah, I mean, over at Bleacher Report, we do the Stick to Football podcast twice a week. It's myself and, like you said, Connor Rogers do a show that comes out every Wednesday. It's more of your, like, hardcore draft news and analysis, mock drafts, big boards. And then we have a show that comes out on Friday morning with myself, with Mello, and our bartender, Dan, where it's half football and half everything else. You know, just, it can get crazy. Like last week we did a segment where they made fun of me for players I've missed on in the draft. And we do like top fives that sometimes are football related, sometimes aren't. So it's more of the way I always sell it to people is that if you've had a really bad week, the Friday morning podcast is for you because we do talk about the draft, but then we also try to have a lot of fun as well.
That's awesome. And that's something everyone definitely needs to check out. We'll go ahead and get into the Jaguar stuff then. The biggest news this week out of Jacksonville is the Blake Bortles extension. What were your immediate takeaways from that deal?
You know, I liked it. And I know that there might be Jags fans who are like ready to move on from this guy. But I find it appealing that you can keep Bortles for at least 1 year and figure out if this year was the real deal or not. Like, was this a mirage or has he really turned the corner and now he's this, you know, quarterback that could take you to the AFC championship game? I think that's something that you want to see through and try to figure out, okay, like this is a guy that we like and that you invested a third overall pick on. So to see what he can be, I think now you can do it in an inexpensive fashion, especially compared to a lot of the deals that are being done. And it gives you some space to maybe re-sign Allen Robinson. It gives you some space to do some things as far as filling needs go. So I'm a big fan of the move. I know it's popular to make fun of Bortles and to kind of crap on him, but I always love these stories where a guy just does turn it around and ends up being a really good quarterback.
Now, people are considering this to be somewhat of a bridge deal, and you mentioned needs, and we're going to get more into the team's overall needs. I'd still say quarterback is probably up there. Chad Henne will most likely not be coming back, at least from what we gather. There's been no buzz on him getting re-signed, and it's been viewed that maybe the Jaguars should draft a developmental guy that down the road could end up replacing Blake Bortles if he doesn't keep continuing to grow on what happened last year. Would you consider that to be something that with this deal is a little easier for them to address maybe in the first 2 days of the draft?
I think yes and no. I mean, from a team building standpoint, yes, you can obviously do that. I do think that from a saving face standpoint, you probably don't want to sign a guy to a 3-year contract and then draft his replacement. It's not that it's not doable. It's just not the craftiest thing that you could do, especially like in round one. Now in round two, things get a little different. And by round three, yeah, everything's on the table at that point. But I know there's a precedent for it with like Mike Glennon signing as a free agent with the Bears and they draft his replacement. And then You know, Matt Flynn back in the day signed with the Seahawks. They drafted Russell Wilson in the third round, and obviously that one worked out really well. But I just find it hard to explain to ownership or to fans or to the media and say, oh, no, we believe in this guy. We're going to sign him to a contract, but we don't believe him enough that we're not going to draft a quarterback. And especially in a class like this year where there's not expected to be great value at pick 29 or pick 30 overall, to where you're like, okay, well, this type of player just fell to us, so we have to go draft him. You know, I personally feel like if you draft Mason Rudolph or Lamar Jackson late in round one, that's currently a reach. So I think this frees you up to address other areas, whether it's the offensive line, wide receiver, safety, whatever it might be, linebacker, and feel like you have a guy that you at least know what you've got with Blake Bortles, and it allows you to be a little more aggressive with some of those other needs.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of touched on it right there, some of the needs that the Jaguars have. And the Jags, as of late, have been really good in filling holes through the draft, kind of getting that homegrown talent going. But what would you classify as the Jaguars' maybe top three or five needs?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is that left guard spot, you know, trying to figure out what's going to happen there. You know, Omeye is a free agent and a replaceable player, frankly. So I think that's a big need. And a reason that people have, you know, talked about guys like Isaiah Wynn or Will Hernandez or even Billy Price as being maybe some options who could come in and fill that role right away and give the Jaguars a big strength on the offensive line. The wide receiver is another one that's very obvious. Allen Robinson's a free agent coming off a torn ACL. Marquise Lee is a free agent as well. And after those guys, there are some talented wide receivers. And like you said, they've done a great job with this homegrown talent of, you know, college free agents like Allen Hurns and Keelan Cole and fourth-round picks like Dede Westbrook. And being able to find those guys and plug them in and get production is really encouraging. But without Allen Robinson, you don't have that number one guy. And I think we even saw that this year other guys stepped up and they did a great job of keeping things going. But they need that true number one receiver. And if he's not back, I think that becomes a pretty big need. And then I look at linebacker as a need. I know that, you know, the day of a base 4-3 and that middle linebacker is going to play 90% of your snaps, those days are kind of gone. You know, everyone's going sub package. You want speed at the position. But Paul Posluszny being a free agent, being an older dude, and them having not, you know, addressed that Miles Jack in the second round, I love where they've been playing him. And he can probably take on some of that role. But I would like to keep him and Telvin on the outside and maybe see an athletic inside linebacker. I don't know that Leighton Vander Esch is going to make it to that point anymore. I really liked him for them a few weeks back. But if someone like Malik Jefferson were able to impress them with his athleticism and then they felt like, okay, we just have three really badass athletic linebackers, then that would make a little more sense.
Mm-hmm. I was going to bring up tight ends in a second, but you mentioned that about linebackers. From what I could tell a couple weeks ago, I believe it was around the Senior Bowl, Nick DeLuca was someone that I had heard whispers of mild interest about. What do you think of him? I know he's kind of viewed as a mid to later round guy, but as a potential fit there.
No, I like him a lot. He is viewed as, like you said, a mid to late guy. I really liked him. The little bit we got to see him at the Senior Bowl, really good size. I mean, he's 6'3", 250. I think he's going to test well. I pulled up my notes really quickly on him, and the one thing that really stood out was his read and recognition skills, playing middle linebacker. Like, just when he sees it, he can get there in a hurry, and there's not that hesitation of, he's a step late or a second late, and especially coming out of a small school, that's a really important thing. But for DeLuca, the huge question is injuries, because he was hurt in 2016 and he was hurt in 2017. So that's just where you start to worry about, you know, this guy's taking a pounding through high school and college. Is he still going to be able to stay healthy and produce in the NFL?
Now, I mentioned tight ends. From just previous draft history, tight end has never been a really highly valued position for Tom Coughlin or Dave Caldwell. I think Coughlin's taken one tight end in the top 100 since he was with Jacksonville last time. So I'm curious whether or not they would address the position, but regardless, who are some guys you like as fits out of both, you know, the big name guys and maybe some later round guys who aren't getting as much buzz?
You know, I really like this tight end class, and I know I've seen people on Twitter say that, oh, this tight end class isn't any good, and I'm kind of looking around my empty office like, what? I like this tight end class. So, you know, I like Mike Gesicki and Hayden Hurst and Dallas Goedert and, You know, Ian Thomas from Indiana is a really intriguing athlete, and Dalton Schultz from Stanford is a hell of a blocker. Like, he's a really good player. So is Smythe from Notre Dame. They're both very good blockers. And Mark Andrews is an intriguing guy that came out early that, if depending on how well he moves at the combine, could really rise up. So I like the tight end class, and you nailed it. You know, this has not been an area that Tom Coughlin has historically been aggressive about filling. But I think that could be okay this year, because you could get someone like a Dalton Schultz in the third round and get a really good player who can come in and give you that seam threat that's really lacking right now. And so it's kind of a – when you look at the philosophy of teams and then what matches up on the board in terms of talent, this might actually be a really good year for that, because some of the talent at tight end and even some of the talent at linebacker, which is another area that Coughlin's Giants never drafted early, the talent in these years' classes are actually really good in those kind of third to fourth rounds, and that could be a fit for what they're trying to do.
I'm a very big Mike Gesicki fan. This brings me to a question from my buddy on Twitter, not Jaguars related, but Gesicki related. There's been talk of him blowing up combine records and stuff like that. What are your expectations for him at the combine?
You know, I don't know if he'll blow up records, but his vert should be very, very impressive, and his broad jump should be too. I think he's going to test well. Just glancing at the tight end list, I would think he's probably going to be the most impressive athletically out of them all. It's hard to say. You know, the vert record is 35 inches by Chris Conley. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to get to that, but he might get pretty damn close.
Now, you mentioned earlier how you consider this a deep tight end draft or a very good class, and other guys aren't considering it as much. So kind of on that aspect, who are some guys in general that you really like that you might consider a top 50 guy that other people might not, who's a stud for you?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I swear to God, I'm not trying to hedge on this. You can listen. I give this answer all the time. I really try to insulate myself from other analysts just because I don't want their thoughts to creep into my own. And that might sound ridiculous. You know, it might be like, well, just ignore it. But it's hard to do, especially when you talk about players as often as a lot of us do. It can be easy to let something seep in. So some guys that I probably am higher on, I'm definitely higher on Josh Allen than a lot of people. that's one that stands out, in my opinion. I'm probably higher on Connor Williams as well. I still view him as a really good tackle prospect, and I think there have been some people move down on him a little bit more. I like Isaiah Oliver from Colorado a lot. He's pretty firmly entrenched as my number three corner in this class. I'm still really high on Ronnie Harrison, the safety from Alabama. I just think it, you know, in the right scheme, he could be a very, very good player. Those are the ones that kind of stand out to me. Mm-hmm. I might be higher on Christian Kirk than I know I'm higher on Christian Kirk than some of my scouting buddies in the NFL are, because I have him as a top 45 guy, and they keep trying to tell me he's like a third rounder. But it's also, you know, it's that time of year where you're kind of, you know, out here on your own evaluating players, and you haven't really talked to a whole lot of people. And so the combine will really help solidify, especially for, you know, like character and background and injury type stuff, that it's harder to get when you're not going into those schools every week.
Yeah.
It'll help me get that info within the next 10 days, probably.
Now, the first need you mentioned for Jacksonville was that left guard spot. This seems to be a relatively steady interior offensive line class. Who are some guys you think fit best here in Jacksonville with this power scheme they're running with Leonard Fournette, as well as some guys who aren't getting as much buzz later on that could end up being a steal?
Yeah, I really like Will Hernandez in that power scheme. You know, he's kind of a throwback guy. He's like 6'3", 340. He wears a neck roll.
He
doesn't fit. Yeah, I mean, that's awesome, right? And I think he does fit in a power scheme well. Billy Price from Ohio State, he played right guard up until this year, and then he moved into center. I think he fits, too, of just kind of that – I keep stopping myself from cursing. Am I allowed to curse on this podcast?
Go ahead.
Okay, cool. I just wanna, you can hear me probably, like, making sure I'm not. Okay, so, like, Billy Price is just a badass, and it's great because every time he fires up the ball, it's just – you know he's going to dump someone, and he has great reach. So you guys are obviously set at center, but I like that he can play guard. And in a pinch, if Linder gets hurt, you've got a guy who could come over and play center at a high level. So those are two guys that I like early on. I think when you start to look at, like, the depth of the guard class, it falls off really, really hard for me after that. Especially after Hernandez. Sam Jones, I liked coming out of Arizona State a little bit early. He would probably need to gain some strength, but I do think that he could fit, especially as a left guard in that scheme. Sean Walsh from Iowa is a little undersized, but I think that there's going to be some similar things there. And then Taylor Hearn from Clemson would be another like late round guy that I like. And I'll say this, I like his film. I've heard there might be like, you know, he might not actually really like football and just doesn't really care about it. We'll see, you know, again, within the next week, once I have the ability to talk to some people and vet some of that information. But, you know, he's a 330-pound guard who, you know, was able to really easily move folks when he was at Clemson. So he would be someone I would keep an eye on too.
Yeah, you can, Zach can confirm, and probably most of my Twitter followers can. I am a Will Hernandez stan. I could say that in Mobile, my eyes were fixated on him almost every practice, mauling people. But just kind of switching to the right guard spot real quick, what are your thoughts on a guy like Braden Smith?
You know, I liked Braden Smith a lot at one point. And then one thing that just kept bothering me about his tape was that he falls off so many blocks. So I do still like him. I have him ranked like 65 overall or something. So a pretty good grade on him. But he just has to be more consistent. I don't know if he's being over-aggressive because he is mean. I mean, he's a son of a bitch when he comes off the ball. It's just a matter of, is he actually going to maintain and control his blocks? So that's why I moved down on him a little bit. I think he would be a really good fit at right guard, though.
Yeah, and then you mentioned Lamar Jackson earlier, how it would kind of be a reach at 29. Just from a fit standpoint, how do you feel Lamar Jackson would do in a like a Jacksonville?
I think personality wise it's a great fit because he's not going to have the pressure of, you know, a New York or one of those big markets where he's expected to come in and play right away. From a scheme perspective, I don't think he's a great fit with what Marone has done historically. But that doesn't mean that it can't work. You know, I got some of the things they did late this year when they finally just like let Blake run around and make plays. I think that could work. I would be excited about the vertical passing game, especially if they could clean up some of Lamar's footwork issues where he's not really stepping into the ball and causing some things to launch. If you had time to work on that and adjust it, then I do think it could work. The unknown for me with Lamar Jackson is honestly just, I've had an opportunity to talk to all the other quarterbacks in this class except for Josh Rosen. And I was able to, you know, he's so easy to get stuff on because his coach got fired and it has nothing to do right now. So he can talk, and he went through the Elite 11 process and all those people know him. So other than Rosen, Jackson is the one guy I haven't really had a chance to get to know yet. And that's always such an important part of the quarterback evaluation for me is, you know, what has this guy been asked to do? And not just what we think he's been asked to do by watching film, but like actually talk to him and what were you asked to do in this offense? What are you comfortable with? What are you not comfortable with? And I think that's the biggest question for him right now. And it's honestly the same question I have about Baker Mayfield is, what is that transition going to be like for you guys? Because, you know, I talked to Pat Mahomes a month ago about his transition and he was like, there's no way I could have played in the NFL, you know, week one. I just wasn't ready mentally. I definitely wasn't ready. And you know, he and I talked about Baker because they were at Tech together and we talked about Lamar Jackson. And, you know, just it's really hard for guys, depending on what they were asked to do in college, to make that jump. And so I think that's my biggest concern with him is how long is it going to take for him to mentally get caught up to where he has to be.
Now, since we're on the topic of quarterbacks, how many teams do you see really going after a quarterback in the first round, assuming, you know, Kirk Cousins, we got his main suitors in what seems to be Denver, Minnesota, and New York. But other teams as a whole, where do you see some of these guys ending up in kind of ideal fits for each guy?
Yeah, I expect four in the top 10 as of now. Now, like you said, free agency could change all of that because if Cousins goes to the Jets and if Keenum goes to the Broncos, well, that there's two of the top 10 that are gone. So barring a trade, you know, I think Sam Darnold goes to Cleveland. And I think that's a great fit for him. You know, he has the personality to handle everything that being the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns means. Mm-hmm. You know, he's never going to get too high or too low with it. You know, it's people are going to wear that fucking jersey with 30 names on it to the stadium, and he's not going to care. You know, he just wants to play football. I think the Giants, I actually think the Giants go Saquon Barkley at two. Josh Rosen's the tough one to place because he needs to go somewhere where he's going to be challenged mentally. He needs to go somewhere where, you know, he can be who he is. I think the Dolphins would work really well because I think Adam Gase would get it. I mean, if Adam Gase can get along with Jay Cutler, he can get along with anyone. So, I don't know that Rosen will last that long, but it does make sense to me just as a fit. Baker, I hope that Baker doesn't end up somewhere like the Jets where he's going to – the first thing those people in the New York media are going to do is start calling him Johnny Manziel, and he's going to get pissed, and it's not going to be a great marriage. So I would love to see Baker go to Washington, play behind Alex Smith, learn from somebody who had that pressure of being a rookie number one overall pick and can kind of help him learn things and be a mentor for Josh Allen. And I am. I'm a Josh Allen fan. I hope that – and I probably am more so because everyone else hates him. So I just want him to do well and prove people wrong. I think Arizona makes sense. Even though Bruce Arians is gone and it's a different system – I think that one does make sense just because they're still going to want to be aggressive, pushing the ball vertically. It is a situation where he's not going to get that immediate pressure to play right away because they're going to bring in a free agent quarterback. So those are kind of how I see at least where the top four quarterbacks best fits anyway. I mean, it'll all get blown up as soon as the free agent signs. But as of right now anyway, that's what looks good.
And then one of our last kind of draft questions before we segue into the next and probably more fun segment of The Bachelor. Who are some guys that talent-wise they should be considered in day one or day two, but due to off-the-field issues, obviously won't be taken that high? The first name that comes to mind for me is Antonio Callaway.
Yeah, Antonio Callaway might not get drafted. I guess it's sad, but he kind of brought it on himself. So I don't know if it is sad, but he could have been the number one receiver in this class. I'm honestly shocked he got invited to the combine. Arden Key from LSU is another one. I mean, I assume this story is out there. I hope so. If not, then you guys get to break some news here. But he left the scoop. Team. He left the team in the spring, right? And yeah, taking a leave of absence, which is a red flag, right? While he's gone, he got shoulder surgery. The team didn't even know this dude had shoulder surgery till he came back in a sling. He put on like 35 pounds during this time. It's just, he's kind of a nightmare off the field, but he's also this like weird, like lovable, goofy kid, and he's great at football, but there are big question marks about him. Holton Hill at Texas got kicked out of school this year, just can't stay clean. He's one that I don't know if he's going to pass the drug test at the combine. I hope he does. But, you know, you always root for guys to do better than you expect. Mm-hmm. So he's another guy that I think he would be in the top 40 or 45 talk if he was able to stay clean. Just unfortunately couldn't do it.
Gotcha. And I think that will just about sum up our football side. I'm going to go on mute now because I know nothing about The Bachelor, and I'm just going to take in all of this knowledge before we get to the finale tonight. So, Chris, go ahead and do your thing.
All right, so I guess I will lead off with, did you watch the Women Tell All last night?
So I didn't, and I'm not shy about this on Twitter. I'm a single dad, and I'm leaving for Indianapolis for a week. So I tried to cram in as much time with my son as I could over the weekend, and that meant he got to pick what we watched last night, and we watched spring training baseball. So it wasn't a complete failure.
You still
but
got sports.
I have it DVR'd to watch.
Okay,
so,
yeah, I watched most of it. So it was it'll be interesting. I won't even want to spoil it for you. I'll let you be surprised with what's on there. But going to our first hard-hitting question, should Tia be next year's Bachelorette?
I hope so. If she is, I'm applying to be a contestant. I don't know if there's like how that timeline works out, but I'm all about it. She's from not too far from me. So maybe I'm just a sucker for like the brunette with a southern accent, which is exactly my ex-wife, but I hope so. She's just so like sweet and lovable, but maybe that wouldn't make for a very good show. I don't know.
Yeah, when she got voted off, I was distraught. I was really rooting for her to get there once Jenna and other people got kicked off. She kind of won me over really the first night when she brought Ari that like little wiener and said, "I hope you don't already have a little wiener." I thought that was hilarious. Yeah,
that was great. And I guess she's not that sweet because she was like talking shit behind people's back, you know, like, this girl's an immature psycho who, you know, I guess they didn't know that she was missing, you know, but like, I also kind of liked that. She really couldn't do anything wrong in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that in itself was a whole crazy story about Becca, like, going missing. They addressed that last night, so you'll get some background behind that. It's a pretty funny story. But this is kind of going to the opposite spectrum of sweet and nice. Was Crystal the worst contestant ever on The Bachelorette?
Oh, I hated her so much. And so the backstory on why I watched The Bachelor, this is the first year I've ever watched it. And I have this group of friends, and one of my best friend's wives is like in our group. Mm-hmm. And so we're making her go to baseball games and do all this other shit. And it was finally like, we need to do one thing that Amy likes. She was like, I want you guys to watch The Bachelor. So we were like, let's do it. And we just kind of threw ourselves into it. So Crystal was, I hated her. Like, I immediately, yep. I wanted one of the other girls to kick her ass.
It was The Voice.
It was The Voice and like even the like bomb.com shit. Yeah. Like, I don't know. That just, it got on my nerves really quickly.
Fake glitter.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. So she's the worst contestant that I have ever seen, but I have a very small sample size to compare it to.
Yeah, I can agree. I had watched The Bachelor a few years ago, but then obviously had zero interest. And then for some reason I had started watching, I saw that it was coming back on. I was like, you know, I'm going to watch it. And then I saw fellow people like you on Twitter were watching. I was like, okay, I'm not alone in this. So I watched it and I found out this is great television. Like, I was satisfied every Monday that I watched it. And so I can't also base Crystal on really any other past seasons. I've had other people tell me some people are worse, but I can't really even remember their names. But Crystal by far is probably one of the worst human beings that I have watched on television.
It makes me wonder, though, if she will be the Bachelorette, just because she's so hated that it's like a car crash. You shouldn't watch it, and you don't want to watch it, but you can't help yourself kind of thing. Although, again, I know so very little about how the show works.
Yeah.
So it's I'm not an expert. Don't anyone take my word for it.
From Bachelor and Bachelorette experts, which are not me, they are feeling that Tia should be the next one, but obviously they'll probably do whatever gets the best ratings. But you mentioned this in your tweet to Zach just a few, like probably 30 minutes ago. I want to hear your thoughts on Bree getting sent home week one.
Oh, it was heartbreaking. Like, she was, you know, like they're getting out of the limo and you're just doing like the eyeball test, right? Of like that one. No, yes, no, yes. And she's a sportscaster. So if she's somehow listening to this Locked On Jaguars podcast, I'm single. She's single. So we, you know, she can follow me on Twitter and we can have a Twitter success story of romance.
Can we come to the wedding if this happens as like facilitators, facilitators to the marriage?
Yeah. You guys can be bartenders or something. Sweet. You know, we'll get you hooked up. So
that's fine by me.
Bree, I need to see Bree Miller, in the next few months or years. Make it
what
happen.
About Jenna? What about Jenna Thornton?
I mean,
that's Zach's girl. So
there's a backstory on that. She, I had no interest in the show until Chris in week one came out. And what was it that you said about her?
Okay. So I had missed, I had a DVR the first 2 weeks because I was bad at timing and I actually don't have cable. I have an antenna, so I can't even watch like TV unless it's live or if it's on Hulu. So anyway, I'm in week three and I'm trying to remember. I think it was the race car episode, the race car date. And Jenna had just popped on my screen. Like, as soon as I walked in, she walked in and she was like being like a little bitchy. And I was like, oh, I don't like this girl.
Shocker.
So I was like, I tweet out, I'm like, Jenna's already my least favorite, hashtag The Bachelor. And I kid you not, 5 minutes later, she adds me. And she's like, it's okay, you're my least favorite too. And at that moment, her clapping back at me made her from my least favorite to my most favorite. And I was rooting for her the rest of the way. And of course, Zach and other buddies of mine were hopping in and were, you know, just roasting because of it. And trying to slide into her DMs. So that's how that whole thing happened. So I guess that could be Zach's girl through my
yeah Jenna that's, Jenna if you're
that's
listening
my philosophy
Jenna, if you're listening, and I know that we still follow each other, but I'm sure you have me on mute by now, totally understood. But if you are listening, you are always welcome to come on here and roast Chris a little more.
I feel like a mute is like the Twitter version of a restraining order, you know? So it's like
probably deserved.
I know I'm sure I'm super muted by many many Jaguar fans, and hopefully I haven't creeped any girls
out.
Would you
look at that? But Jenna is liking tweets about her coming on the show. Just an FYI.
So you're not muted.
So not muted. Well, actually, I tweeted it out. So maybe she saw my tweet. Well, she saw open mic. Anyway, now this is a question from Twitter, because you said enough football questions. So they delivered with a bachelor question. What are the odds that Kendall tells Ari that she isn't ready for marriage, even though he specifically asked her before he sent Tia home?
I think it's a great chance, and like, it has to be. If I my friends are trying to get me to do this like fantasy league bachelor thing, but I think that's one of the questions this week. That. Yes, I think that's one of the questions this week. I got a screenshot of it, and it was like, if one of them admits she's not ready, and I was like, it has to be Kendall. Has to be. Which I was out on her. I was out on her until last week when she wore the romper, and then I was back in. So I'm very much moment to moment with everyone but Becca right now, who I absolutely can't stand.
Becca is, I felt like I did not see any of her during the entire season, and then she somehow made it into the final four. I was almost questioning myself. I was like, who is this woman? Because I knew Lauren B, because she's like probably the hottest one on the show. CN was super smart. And then Caroline. My final four was Jenna, Lauren, CN, and Caroline, and I was 3 for 4 being wrong. But now I guess this leads to the most pressing question. Who is going to win? Who's going to be with Ari forever and ever?
Oh my gosh, this is harder than picking a mock draft. I don't think this is not who I would pick at all. I think it's Becca. At every turn, I keep waiting for her to get sent home, and she's never sent home. So there's obviously something there that we're all missing. But he's also kind of a total creep. So mm-hmm. That's okay that he picks the one that I would be least likely to pick.
Now, for me, all the signs seem to point towards Lauren, because they're both super awkward, and there was that one date, I think it was Paris, where they literally didn't say anything to each other. He leaves, comes back, and says, I think I'm falling in love with you, after nothing was said. And then it just seems
that was
like
so weird.
It's like their connection is somehow so strong, yet they say nothing. So I feel like the logical choice for me is Lauren, but I feel like personally I want it to be Kendall.
I just want – we're recording this early in the afternoon. I don't read spoilers. I want to know who shows up, whose ex shows up, and was like, fuck you, man. I want her back. Like, that's the whole –
yes.
That's all I'm waiting
that
for tonight.
That is uh-huh. Also what I'm waiting for, and that would be fantastic. Now, if that's Becca's ex, do you think that affects the decision at all?
Oh, no. I think he doubles down on it. It's like, oh, yeah, watch this. You know, you got to be an alpha male when that stuff happens and okay, just be like,
so
nope. Sorry,
so,
man.
That's almost solidifying it. If it's Becca's ex,
I also might be just predicting that so that I remain right about this. So.
It's all right. Your focus needs to be on Bree. That's where all your focus is going to be.
All my energy is right there. I just followed her on Twitter while we were talking.
Oh, perfect.
You know, laying the groundwork.
We'll make sure to
the
get
shot is up.
We'll make sure to get the snippet of audio from this show to send to her. That way she knows it's genuine.
Yeah, for real. I have to do a pitch to her on the podcast this week of, you know, my short little bachelor application.
Well, that looks like that just about does it for us here. I learned a lot, guys. Thank you. I might watch the show tonight. But Matt, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a great episode. A lot of content out there for really all audiences. Really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me, and enjoy watching tonight. And you guys can join in with the rest of Twitter and tell me if I was wrong. So it'll be fun.
I'm hoping that, yeah, I'm just hoping for a good episode.
Definitely. Well, Matt, enjoy Indianapolis in the combine. You've got a very busy next week or so, plus obviously the rest of draft season ahead of you. So good luck in all your endeavors as we go on, and I'm sure we'll be catching up with you soon.
Sounds great, guys. Thank you.
And be sure to check out the Locked On Jaguars Twitter handle at Locked On Jaguars, the website www.lockedonjaguars.com. And if you haven't already, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Spotify, and Megaphone.fm. We will catch up with you guys next time.